So high priest needed to be called. And we have Jesus called in the in the order of Melchizedek, this one from Old Testament that only mentioned the one time. Okay. The second qualification, whoever was high priest needed to be human to understand the needs, those things that affected someone that could sympathize with people, understand the weaknesses, to be under the law. Paul talks about Jesus was under the law, to redeem ones under the law. To be in that position was also something of the high priest. Jesus also was human and was tempted. If you go back to chapter 4, he could sympathize with our weakness, has been tempted in every way just as we are, yet without sin. One author I was reading says the temptations Jesus faced would have been much more than what we would face. Human response kind of built in when things get too hard or too painful or whatever, our body kind of shuts down. If you're suffering from something, you pass out, and it's a way of escape. Yeah, if you think of temptations when they come, we might resist for a while, and then becomes a point where we give in to the temptation. And with temptations, they usually build. It starts small and just keeps increasing. Imagine a temptation that just keeps going, getting harder and harder and harder. But trying to imagine the temptation to turn rocks into food after you've been fasting for over a month, knowing he had the power to do it, and still resisting that temptation for a bite of food. So the temptations Jesus would have felt would have been greater even than what we feel. And he did it all without sin. So he could sympathize with the temptations. He would understand our weakness, would have a sympathy for us, an empathy. In, verse 2 says, he is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and going astray. This is the qualification of a high priest. The Greek word there that's translated as deal gently is, as I understand it, to find the correct balance between extremes. Greek thought was everything should be in balance. So you don't go too far one way or the other, but find the correct middle point. What's the perfect spot in the center for the need there? So the high priest had to find that one little point where it would help the most, and then to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. And these would have been not for deliberate sins. These would have been sins where through ignorance or simply failing to resist the temptations, but not the deliberate sins, the arrogance, where the law says to do this, and you say, I want to do it my way. That kind of sin, the sacrifice was not for that. But it was for the daily sins that the believer confronted with constantly. So the regular priest would understand that. Because it being sinful, he would know that. And would have to offer a sacrifice for himself, and then turn around and offer the sacrifice to the for the people. His problem was the sacrifice was always a temporary thing. It had to be offered again and again and again. Imagine just serving as a priest, offering sacrifices every day, pretty much filling your day offering sacrifices. It was a sacrificial system set up, but needed a greater sacrifice. In addition to the sacrifices, the priest offered up prayers. And it said Jewish priests would talk about three types of prayer. There were the words themselves, the prayers. Then there were cries where in anguish you can't put things into words, just cries out, whether in frustration or pain or whatever, the suffering that can't be put into words. Paul says Jesus understands that, hears our cries and understands what can't be put in words. And then the third prayer would be in tears. So you could say the words, you could cry out in anguish or whatever, and finally tears. And the tears would have been a stronger prayer than the cry. The cry would have been a stronger prayer than the words. When Jesus goes to the Garden of Gethsemane, he speaks the words, but he also cries out, and the tears or the bloody sweat all offered in prayer to the Father. He also prayed regularly. How many times in the New Testament does it talk about Jesus going off by himself to pray? Overnight or for a day, sometimes they would have to look for Jesus because he had gone off to pray. Excuse me. So the offering of the prayers was there. When Lazarus died, Jesus' prayer was he wept. And then he also, before going to the garden, prayed that they would remain strong. The title of the Bible I was using, I was talking about Jesus' high priestly prayer with the disciples. But as his disciples today, that prayer was also for us, because he was praying for those of that time, but also for those who would come later. And then knowing what was to come and willingly go that way. Today's gospel reading, Jesus tells the disciples, okay, we're going to Jerusalem. This is what's going to happen. I'll be arrested, tortured, killed, and on the third day rise again. He understood that. He knew that. He told the disciples clearly, this is what's happening. And now he is at the point where that's going to start. Knowing what's coming, a flogging. Imagine being whipped from head to foot. It says you were covered with stripes. Isaiah says, by his stripes we are healed. A whipping left you looking almost like a zebra with red stripes all over your body. Because they didn't just hit your back. It was everywhere. So he knew the suffering to come, the whippings, the floggings, the start, then crucifixion, finally death. And probably the hardest part is he cries out to the Father, my God, why have you forsaken me? Probably would have been the greatest suffering. And the temptation to avoid that would have been huge. But yet he says, yes, this is your will to the Father, and follows it. So he's acting as high priest there. He's still acting as high priest today. He's representing us before God the Father, taking our needs to the Father, asking for mercy from the Father. A priest would spend some time also teaching the people, helping them understand the God they worshiped. Jesus spent, 3 years teaching, preaching, bringing God's word as prophet. And the final act then, the act of a sacrifice. Says he learned obedience in what he suffered. He offers this one final perfect sacrifice. And one author was saying, because Jesus as God is immortal, the sacrifice itself is immortal for all time. It doesn't need to be repeated. It was given willingly, takes away, takes all of our punishment, and it's final. Kind of show that that's really the case. Then in 70 AD, the temple is destroyed, and the whole sacrificial system is done away with. The letter here was probably written just before that happened, maybe a year or two. Sacrificial system was still going on, but the readers would have said, "Oh yeah, Jesus' sacrifice was, the last, the ultimate one. We don't need, what was lost." Just kind of on a final thought. Have you ever heard the term, many paths lead to God? Now, it's something that I've heard I don't know how many times. It may be true, may not be true. I don't really care. What I want is a path that doesn't lead to God. I want a path that reaches God. There's a difference. With Jesus as our high priest, we want a path that makes it all the way. He's torn down the dividing wall of our sin. His cross has bridged that chasm between us and God. We have a pathway all the way, not because of what we've done, but because of what Jesus did. Any other path is simply a dead end. So we've got Jesus, our high priest. So going back to the start there, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we possess. And we'll end here then. For next week, we'll be looking at Philippians 2, verses 5 through 11. If you want to look at that ahead of time, I can help. And we'll let you go and hopefully see many of you here at church today. Okay, thank you. Bye.